You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Yes, it is, my friends. Carlin on this Monday, 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. 800-919 ESPN. Joe Judge has made his first major mistake as Giants head coach. In just a bit, we'll get to Daniel Jones and why it doesn't necessarily deserve a lot of applause for going out there and playing yesterday. And we will discuss Andrew Thomas and his development, and also just frankly why you need to just trust me and listen to me and understand that I'm smart. I get it. It will benefit you in the long run. 800-919-3776. You can tweet us as well on Twitter at Chris Carlin. I have major problems with Joe Judge from yesterday, and I know this has been a theme all day long, but it truly bears repeating. When Joe Judge told the Fox crew before the game and on during their production meeting, they put Daniel Jones through the ringer last week, and everything came out A-okay, and they were that confident in how he looked. Exactly what did that ringer look like? Did you hit him with a pillow? Because I don't know how you could look at Daniel Jones yesterday and confidently say he was ready to play football on a high level and win a game for you. I don't know how you can do that. Daniel Jones was a mannequin in the backfield, a sitting duck. And it's remarkable to me that in that situation, the head coach would let him play. And frankly, more than anything, it reeked of desperation. And I get it. I understand. You know, we were sitting here last week giddy about the fact that the Giants went on the road and knocked off the Seahawks. And shame on me for getting as pumped up as I did about it. Not that the Giants aren't that good, but that not realizing that they're with their road that was in front of them, it's difficult as it is, that the Washington football team right there with their road, as easy as it is, that there weren't mistakes still to be made. I just wasn't counting on them from the head coach. And maybe I took it for granted, considering how well he has really handled this entire situation all season long. Let's call this what it was. It was a horrible decision to let Jones play that football game. Horrible. And not only did you put him out there when you didn't necessarily need to, I would argue that you had a better chance to win the game, although you probably weren't going to, with Colt McCoy at quarterback. I think you had a better chance to win the game with Colt McCoy at quarterback than you did Jones. But you put him out there in a situation where he has a real chance to get himself hurt worse. And it looks like, at least it sounds like, that's a possibility. You know, when you say a player needs to be able to protect himself, what were you looking at that made you think that Daniel Jones could protect himself yesterday? He couldn't. He not once attempted to leave the pocket in any situation. It's one thing to not run RPOs because he can't go and run. Okay, I get it. It's a big part of his game. But I get it. It's another thing to just sit there and not move. He couldn't move. And it got progressively worse throughout the game. I don't know if he aggravated the injury. I don't know if the shot started wearing off. But he took a beating. He took an absolute beating. And sitting back there and not moving is not what he does to be successful. Part of his brilliance, when he is at his best, in those fleeting moments of brilliance that we have seen, has always been about his mobility. He's a chance to extend the play And if he can't do that, why is he out there when he couldn't even step into throws? Throws were off the mark left and right. Left and right. That's a time when he has to be able to protect him from himself. And so after the game, he says, we're not sure, you know, what his situation will be, but I don't regret putting him out there. They did pull him late in the game wisely. Should have been pulled sooner. And it wasn't necessarily for injury reasons. It was for performance reasons. It was the fact that the offense couldn't get a damn thing going with him out there. Offensive line was as bad as it's been in a long, long time. I'm sure Mark Colombo had a nice little smile on his face because it clearly wasn't all his fault. But I would say that when you are in such a bad position like that, and you were comfortable with what you saw from Jones based on what we saw in the game, you say after the game that you had no regrets about the decision. And then today, Joe Judge doubled down.
I'd say the way he moved in the game is what we expected. You know, we put him through enough in practice last week to make sure he was put in a position where he could protect himself. We knew that there were things that were going to come up in the game and some limitations that he was going to have throughout the game. We're willing to live with those. But in terms of the question, do we feel like he moved the same, you know, in practice as he did in the game? I'd say the answer to that is yes, Ryan. What we expected to see, we pretty much saw.
Wow. I mean, that's an indictment right there. If that's what you expected to see, how do you justify putting him out there? He in no way gave you a better chance to win that game than Colt McCoy did. And I am by no means saying that Colt McCoy is a better player, but yesterday he was a much, 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 much better option. And now you're doubling down on it. I understand for a young head coach to not want to look like he's backing off or admitting he made a mistake or really just stepping away from a decision that was made. You have to protect the player from himself there. You talk about the player being able to protect himself. You have to protect him from himself and not have him out there. He was not ready to go. And here's the bigger problem. Now, at the very minimum, you would have been in the same situation today. With Washington winning, with you losing, if you had played McCoy. But you would have had a chance to have Jones much closer to 100% against the Browns this week, who, by the way, have Myles Garrett and Olivier Vernon and can rush the quarterback. But instead now, you lost, Washington won, and now you're potentially screwed for this week. If the Giants lose the division, that decision is ultimately going to be the reason why. 810, abbreviated show tonight, as we know, Inside the Jets every Monday night. I was inside the Jets yesterday for a good quarter and a half. Didn't have to hang around a whole lot longer. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't hang around. I checked in. It was a check-in. It was a flip around. It was a let's hit red zone. We don't even have to get into them tonight if you want, because there's not much to get into. But there's a lot to get into on these Giants. And it starts with the head coach who made that first big mistake yesterday. 919-3776-800-919-ESPN. Open lines. We will get to them here shortly. We will also get to just in a little bit why Jones is not blameless in all of this, and the offensive line as well, and where that plays a major role in how this all played out. You also have to look at Jason Garrett. As John Pacini points out on the comment section of the video stream over on ESPN New York's Facebook page and ESPN 98.7's Twitter, the play calling of Jason Garrett was not exactly top-notch yesterday. You know, whether or not you want to argue that they didn't establish the run enough, it's harder to establish the run when you're not having much success in throwing the football at all, but it makes it all the much more difficult to understand why they would make the decision to try to play with a third down and one and throwing the football kind of on a fade pattern deep in your own territory. I mean, that made no sense to me whatsoever. There were a lot of contributing factors to that game. Jones not only wasn't protecting himself, he wasn't protecting the ball, which is by far the biggest concern of all. And when you let somebody like Hassan Reddick, who's a good pass rusher, he had, what, 5 sacks going into yesterday, but certainly had not, I think it's safe to say, as of yet, become the player that the Cardinals were hoping for him to be yet when they drafted him, what, top 10, I think it was, a couple of years ago, top 15, that he was going to go out there and have 5 sacks yesterday. I mean, who is expecting that? Who is expecting that? I mean, he now has 17 and a half career sacks in his fourth season, and 5 of them came yesterday. 5. I mean, that was matching his season total and more than he had ever had before in a season. And how about this for a statistic? So they had 8 sacks as a whole. Think about this. Going into the game, they had 29 on the year, and they were 14th in the NFL, the Cardinals were. Middle of the pack. Middle of the pack. They are now 6th. 6th. 8 sacks in one day. Wow. Open lines, 800-919-3776. Oh, right out the gate on a Monday. Let's do it. That's right. Oh, Richard, go.
Chris, I listened to you Saturday. That was a great game. Great game. And I'll tell you, Schiano, his post-game press conference, I was in tears when he talked about the players that lost loved ones from COVID and another guy lost one. This guy, he's more than a coach. He's worth every penny the state university pays that guy because he's worth more than – he's really worth more than
a coach. He's done a phenomenal job this season, Richard, and the guy I can't even tell you. And listen, I've known him for 20 years now. His caring for his players –
that was one of the greatest press conferences I've ever heard post-game.
Yeah.
I mean, it had nothing to do with the game.
And you saw him basically in tears at the end of that game because they got as physically beat up as they were, and they were emotionally beat up from the week and from the season. They played 8 straight weeks without a break.
So sorry for
and, you know, Big Ten Conference.
Chris, I just have one criticism. You called your post-game, you called the post-game the fifth quarter show. But the game went into overtime, so you got to call it the sixth quarter show, all right? The fifth quarter was the overtime. We were on our heels listening. We wanted to see when that kid missed the field goal and when the game was secured. That was unbelievable.
You're right. My bad. I should have called it the sixth quarter
show. That's what it should be called from now on when it's in overtime. All right. Let's go
to
Joe
Judge. Or the ninth quarter show or the 15th. We had triple overtime
a few
weeks
ago.
Should have been the eighth quarter show.
Well, maybe one day. All right, Chris, as far as Joe Judge, I said it right away. I called the Giant Station last week. I said, you roll with the hot hand. I don't know how this guy's injury and that, but McCoy played good last week. Give the kid more time. Let him rest. This guy played good. You know, he's a hot hand. Now, he made 2 mistakes. The biggest mistake wasn't putting in Jones as a starter. The biggest mistake, he wasn't prepared to take him out. That's the big. He kept him in there needlessly.
Way too long.
The guy didn't rush for 1 yard.
Richard, once again, you have crystallized my thoughts. I mean, there's no doubt he should have been out of there earlier. There's no question.
It was bad enough he started him. Now, if you're an analytics guy, as we all are in baseball, right? There's got to be an analytics that says if the young quarterback runs with his legs and is always good for 25% of his yardage on running, and he gains no yardage at all, doesn't evade the rush, and is sitting there like a, you know, he was like a 38-year-old Eli Manning without Manning's 2 Super Bowls, without Manning's experience, without Manning's guile. He had nothing going for him. He had young legs that were injured. So he was terrible. He was a sitting duck. end of the third period, they're down 20-7. They get the ball deep in their territory, first down on their 9-yard line, 7-yard line. First, on their own 7. First down, he throws a pass incomplete. Fine. Second down, 9-yard gain by Gallman. Nice. So we got 3rd and 1. 3rd and 1 at the 16. Mm-hmm. The most important thing that we can do now is not score a touchdown. Trust me. We got to keep the drive going. Keep the defense off the field. They were gassed. How he could not see that, I don't believe it. They were he had to shove the ball down their throat, Arizona's throat, get a nice 7-8 minute drive, make the score 20-14, hopefully. But even if you only get a field goal, 20-10, and make them have some pressure on them.
Just take over the show. You got the show. Now, you've got the whole thing. You're saying everything I'm thinking. Just take over the show, Richard.
He throws a 35-yard pass. It was a nice.
All right, well, we don't need to go through everything, but we get the point. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. Thanks for the call. You're right. You're right. You're right. You can't possibly on 3rd and 1 throw the football in that spot. You can't do it. You can't do it. And frankly, it was that's another one of those situations. Like, remember last week when Gase said that he wishes that he had called timeout? Like, that should have been a spot where if Joe Judge heard that, he should have called timeout. or if that was something that was changed at the line, which I don't think it was, you just have to know better. You just have to know better. And not only that, but I think it was it Slayton who cut right in front or Shepard? But they kind of ran around each other, and one of them just cut right to the line of scrimmage. Easy first down with a quick throw in, if you're going to do that. Now, let's throw a quick fade here from our own 16-yard line. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. It made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. And I just don't get it. I don't get it. One tweet, Matt, checking in. Colt McCoy gives him a better chance to win every week. All right, let's not get nuts here, Matt. That's not true. I mean, we have seen the number of times where you have been in a situation with Daniel Jones where he has shown the flashes, where he has shown enough to make you believe. He certainly has shown a lot more. And Darnold showed a decent amount his rookie year. I think Jones overall, when he's been healthy, has shown more than Darnold did. And the biggest knock is, of course, the ball security, which looked like it had gone away as a problem and now is back as a problem. But I think that was all part of him actually sitting there and thinking about the injury. Like, it was in his head all day. And that's where, like, for me, I can't look at Jones and hold him blameless in this. I can't. If you hold Jones blameless in this, you're not paying attention. Jones has to put himself in the right frame of mind, and maybe it's just a maturation thing. If you're trying to go out there and help your team win, and you're going to go play while you're hurt, it's admirable. Don't get me wrong. It's quite admirable. But you also have to make sure that you're putting your team in the best position to be successful. And Daniel Jones yesterday, by going out there, put himself in front of the team, even though he thought he was doing the team a solid. He thought that he was doing the right thing by trying to play while hurt. This was injured as opposed to hurt, and it was also in his mind. And that's where the big problem comes from. If it's going to be in your mind, it's going to show on the field. And for Jones, not even wanting to move one side to another or try to shuffle around or evade the rush at all, it was in his mind all day long, and you cannot function on an NFL field that way. That is the classic example of understanding the difference between I'm going to go out there and play hurt. And if I go out there, I'm hurting my team. If Daniel Jones looked at that situation objectively, he would have known that if he went out there, he was going to be hurting his team. And I think if you asked him today, honestly, hey, listen, should you have played yesterday? And he was going to give you an honest answer, the answer would be no. And he would know that. There have been plenty of quarterbacks, plenty of players over the years that have done that. And they were wrong for doing it because it put their team in a much worse position to win the game. That just can't happen. I don't think it was an insecurity thing. Sometimes it's that. I think it was Jones, after missing a week, doing his best to help his team win. But I'm not going to applaud him for going out and playing hurt. Because to me, when you put yourself out on the field, as admirable as that is, all the excuses, all the reasons why you don't play well go out the window. He's not using it as an excuse today. But if you're on the field, I don't pay attention to that. Okay? If you tell me you're good enough to go, then none of that should matter. It mattered from the get-go yesterday. And I'm not even talking about, like, the sack fumble with Golden wasn't even his fault. You know, he got drilled as that came, and he didn't have much of a chance. But look at some of those other sacks. Look at the majority of those other 7 sacks, 8 total that they had on the day. Tell me at least half of them weren't his fault, outside of the Colt McCoy ones. Because he was holding the football for a long time. And they call it a coverage sack, but what really should happen when there's a coverage sack is a quarterback should be getting outside the pocket and throwing the football away so that he doesn't take a coverage sack. That's on him. 800-919-3776. If he wasn't honest with Joe Judge, with the coaching staff, with the training staff, about his ability to help the team, he hurt the team. And yesterday, by trying to play, Daniel Jones hurt the team. Let us return to the phones. Mike is in Hawthorne. He is next, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, what's going on?
Hey, good evening. Great bumper music there, too. The home of Don LaGreca, as a matter of fact, Hawthorne, New Jersey.
There you go.
Just wanted to say, Craig, I hear what you're saying about, but you know what? You got a kid who was, you know, a top draft pick, and you're a team that we were expecting to handle, we being not the right phrase, the Giants were expecting to handle. And if the kid didn't play and McCoy comes out here and lays an egg, he would have got absolutely roasted for not trying. So, I mean, it's. I understand where you're coming from. I'm a coach. I've coached college. I've coached high school for many, many years. And you got to trust your guy. But I think they should have made a reevaluation at halftime and say, listen, man, you're not, to your point, he's not moving out of the pocket. He's not sliding. He's not getting outside the C-gap at all. He's not helping anything going on. And they should have pulled him at halftime. But I don't blame him one bit for trying. What do you think?
Yeah, but there's a difference, though. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah, he's got to be honest with the staff. But when you do that, if you're trying to help, there is a huge difference there between trying to help your team and understanding that you're hurting your team.
No, I know 100%, but they gave him 2 full days of practice. They felt that they were going to give him a shot. I put this, and again, I think the coach is doing a great job. I really do. I think that they've turned a corner. They're going in the right direction without a question.
Yeah, but I'm saying it as a whole, he had a bad day yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not saying had a bad day, but didn't have a bad day. But the coaches at halftime should have made an evaluation and said, you know what, kid? Sit down. We're going to put McCoy back in, and we're going to see what we got. That's my opinion. That's what I think they should have done. And, again, thanks for what you do, and appreciate the show, and good luck to you.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you, Mike, for checking in. Look, when you do that, when you position it that way, I get it, and it was not Joe Judge's best day. He should have gotten him out much earlier. I mean, he admitted to Shannon Spake that they even talked about pulling him for performance reasons, not even the injury. That's why, like, I can't separate these two right now. How did you expect it to go if that's exactly what you saw last week? I mean, you saw this in practice. You saw what you expected to see in the game, and you were okay with that. In case you missed it, this is what he said earlier today.
I'd say the way he moved in the game is what we expected. You know, we put him through enough in practice last week to make sure he was put in a position where he could protect himself. We knew that there were things that were going to come up in the game and some limitations that he was going to have throughout the game. We're willing to live with those. But in terms of the question, do we feel like he moved the same, you know, in practice as he did in the game? I'd say the answer to that is yes, Ryan. What we expected to see, we pretty much saw.
I mean, that to me is an indictment right there of the decision. And then not getting him out earlier. I mean, it's clear to everybody that he can't move around very well. Because normally, that's what he does. He extends plays. But it's clear in that situation that he was not doing that. And he was not even trying to. He was, if you're talking about being able to protect yourself, like he was overthinking that in that situation. By a lot. Overthinking that. And then let's get to Andrew Thomas for a minute. I mean, look, I know that we have seen some good. I know that last week he graded out as like the top rookie overall among all offensive rookies. That's fine. The problem is he was awful yesterday, just dreadful, and getting beaten like a drum. I mean, did he have to drive Hassan Reddick to the airport too, as poorly as he played, especially later in that game? It was just inexcusable, that level of play. And we are now in, what, week 14? Like, you have to be better than that in week 14. You're supposed to progress and get better and better, and he had. And yesterday was a major setback for Andrew Thomas. Major setback. I mean, that was disturbing. That's a word I would use. That was a disturbing type performance. The only time I've ever seen a performance like that for a player with Reddick, like Reddick, was Osiu Manure when he had 6 sacks against the Eagles, when they had nobody on their offensive line. A Sunday night game. And I think it was 2006, something like that. He had 6 sacks against him at the Meadowlands. Point is, you cannot be a turnstile like that. And he kept him in the game. As much as they've rotated some offensive linemen, didn't rotate him out of there and move Pert into left tackle and, Cam Fleming at right. Tweet, check it in, Mike Segroy. Segroy? Why not? Should have kept him out one more week. What was the harm? Leg injuries aren't that easy to get over. An extra week's rest would have benefited Daniel Jones and kept an experienced Colt McCoy at quarterback. Would have benefited the Giants. It's not even that so much. The biggest way it would have benefited the Giants, you keep them out the extra week, and you have the exact same result as you were hoping to avoid, but if you had played McCoy, like, that was the worst that could happen, right? You lose the game, Washington wins, and as a result, you're a game behind. Now remember, if you're tied with them, you own the tiebreak. So it's not like you're dead here. But it's not a great situation when they have the schedule that they do, even though they have the Seahawks this week. But if you have a Daniel Jones playing this week, who's a statue again, with Myles Garrett chasing him down, good luck with that. I mean, that's not good. Another tweet coming in from our buddy Jarve. There's a big difference between playing hurt or being injured. Hurt means there's pain management, but you can do all the things you normally can on the field. If you can't do the things that make you effective, like run, you're injured and shouldn't play. Exactly. Exactly, Jarve. And that's why Jones was wrong in all of this. He was absolutely wrong in all of this. John Pacini makes a good point over on the live stream where you can comment. We'll put him up and talk about him. He says, I think Judge would have taken Jones out earlier, but the long completion to Tate and subsequent touchdown might have changed his mind. Fair point. Fair point. I would actually argue that he should have known by halftime, though. And that was, what, early third quarter. He should have known by halftime that Jones clearly did not have it, or mid-third quarter, and couldn't move around. And, yeah, he was able to make that throw, but no. I mean, that was a decision that should have been made earlier. If he was on the fence about it the entire time, you're right, that kept him from going over the fence. Huey in St. Louis next. Huey, what's up, baby?
Hey, Colin, how are you, buddy?
Huey, I'm outstanding. What do you got?
Hey, so the whole Giant game yesterday, so I noticed Jones, when he ran on the field, the first time for that first series at the beginning of the game, he was limping then too. And if you look really close, I said to my son, there's something wrong. You can tell right away. I didn't think he looked healthy the whole game. I'm not sure what the point was of playing him yesterday. And, you know, I think you could have put McCoy out there and just tried to have him manage a game and run the ball, you know, 20, 30 times and see what you could get out of it. It's my first criticism of Judge so far this year is he should have known his play a little bit better than he did.
I agree. I think Judge had his worst week with that decision. He should have known better, and he should have gotten him out of the game. And then when you're making some play calls like they did, you got to get in somebody's ear and change that up.
Now, I've heard people be critical of the defense today, but the offense put the defense in some really tough situations yesterday. Field position was horrific.
Listen, I'm not hammering the defense at all. Look at it this way. For instance, that first initial sack fumble that sets you up against your, you know, in the shadow of your goalpost. Right there, Huey, they come up with the stop, but the turnover itself ended up leaving the points because of field position. Exactly.
Right.
I can't pin a lot of it on the defense, frankly. The defense has been the biggest reason why they have been back in it this year.
Well, I didn't realize that they had the second least amount of points in the league next to the Jets. I didn't realize that until I saw that stat today. And that speaks volumes about, you know, the offense, the scoring potential with the offense right now. But the other thing I was really disappointed was the play of the offensive line, especially Thomas, because he had played very well. They graded high the last 2 weeks. And he was a sieve yesterday.
He was absolutely dreadful. And it was as bad as could be. I mean, and it was so encouraging there for a few weeks. It really was.
It was.
That he had figured
it out.
He was ranked
122nd out of 124 graded linemen for yesterday's game.
That's high.
Pretty pathetic. Yeah, exactly. it was tough to take. So let me ask you this: when you go into this week, assuming McCoy plays, you know, I think you have to just try to. And again, I know Cleveland's got a good front, but you're gonna have to run the ball. I mean, you're going to probably – it's going to be another game where you're going to try to manage it and let the defense try to win it for you. And as well as the Browns are playing, Baker Mayfield doesn't scare me in a big game. He just doesn't. And I'm looking at the schedule, Chris, and I agree with what you're saying here. You know, it wasn't a gimme that the Giants were going to get into the playoffs here, even prior to – and the Washington-Pittsburgh game's the killer right now because I had that as a loss for Washington. That may be the difference in the season. But at the same time, you could get to this game Sunday night, and they could have an opportunity to be back in first place again. Because I do believe Seattle's going to give Washington a heck of a game. I'd be surprised if Washington wins, especially if Haskins is playing.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to win the game. And thanks for the call, Huey. I think they're with Haskins especially, and that's one where so far I have not been right on that one, and I'm disappointed that that's been the case. I thought Haskins is going to be much better than. But he didn't look awful when he got in the game yesterday, but he didn't look good. You know, he's got to be a lot better this week if Alex Smith can't play. And it's the same leg, I think, for Alex Smith. I'm not putting him in any sort of jeopardy by running him out there if I'm Washington. Now, I'll say this for the Giants this coming week, okay? As much as we're looking at how great Cleveland is playing overall, at the very least, could Cleveland be in a position where they're actually looking at that as a trap game. I mean, let's argue for a second that the Browns go out tonight and they win this game, even though they just missed a chip shot field goal, right? And the Giants are coming off of a bad loss. Now, it's not a trap game in the traditional sense of, you know, you're playing a good opponent and you're looking forward and you're just coming off a big win the week before, because the week after they play the Giants, they play the Jets. But you do, even though you're in prime time, you are playing a team that you feel like is not nearly as good as you. The primetime factor may take that away because it got flexed in. But why did it get flexed in? It got flexed in primarily because the Giants won last week. And because Cleveland has been as good as they have been, and because Baker Mayfield's a story, Cleveland probably thinks it got flexed in mostly because of them. Well, it got flexed in mostly because of the market size and the Giants actually being interesting this week. I would look at that if I were Cleveland, and I would make sure that I'm not treating it as a trap game, considering how poorly the Giants played and how bad Jones looked, especially if Jones is out there. Because I could see that happening. I could see that happening. I don't think they will, but if they win tonight and they win in convincing fashion over Baltimore, don't be shocked if they're flying a little too high next week. That's definitely possible. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. I get a couple of other thoughts coming. Like we said, we're going to discuss the situation with the Mets' new GM. We're going to discuss the situation, which appears to be deteriorating a bit, with DJ LeMahieu and the Yankees. There were a couple of more tweets that I wanted to get to. Ah, Mark, our buddy, checking in caps, as usual. The Giants are terrible. Cleveland in a rout. Washington wins. Haskins plays well. All right, settle down. And then there was one other one I also wanted to point out, too. Not sure why Judge had no regrets about starting him and keeping him in the game. That was Craig Antman over on Twitter. I wish I knew, too, because I think that's a classic case of a coach in his first year not wanting to admit the mistake, not wanting to show any vulnerability there. And I never have a problem with that. If a coach admits a mistake in that kind of situation, like, hey, I should have gotten him out of there sooner, to me, that's admirable. It's another thing when you're admitting other things, like you don't have a handle for your team or anything like that. It's one thing, though, when you come out and say, listen, Daniel was clearly hampered. I should have gotten him out of there sooner tonight. It's clear that's something that he should have done. Jared Porter introduced today as the Mets' new general manager. So, we know that Sandy Alderson is calling the shots here, correct? Jared Porter's a guy that has the pedigree, to be sure, has spent a lot of time around Theo Epstein, has won championships as part of organizations, won a couple with the Red Sox, the Cubs as well, four championships on a whole. And you look at a guy like that, and he's never been a GM before, but he's going to learn under Sandy. He's obviously learned a whole lot over the last several years, over the last 15, 16, 17 years, working in baseball since he was an intern back in 2004. It's encouraging to see a guy like that in charge of the Mets. You know, and I hate to use this quote, but even though he's a younger guy, meaning he's probably about 40 years old, he feels like an adult the way he talks, even though got a little bro to him the way he looks. Little bro. I'll just say that. However, when it comes to the pedigree, it is all there. But I would say this, you know, you listen to him talk earlier today. He says all the right things. Made the comment when he was asked about Steve Cohen's 3 to 5 year plan about winning a championship, that he accepts that. He wants that challenge. You know, like, he doesn't put a timetable on anything, but he wants an owner that's committed to winning. And for guys that had scared them off from the job, well, that's their problem. But one thing that was very clear, and if you look at how Sandy has operated in his entire life, and baseball life, and how and where this guy comes from, this is not going to all just be going out and trying to buy a championship. I understand where you guys as Met fans are coming from. I'm here to tell you that you need to dial back your expectations of this offseason. This is not going to be multiple huge names coming to this team. They went with McCann over Real Muto, not because of finances necessarily, but they were trying to make a good decision. They had discussions with Real Muto. That number is probably going to be 5 at 125, and he's a very good player, but I think when we look at it, you know, they were not ready to go to that level yet. And I understand that. And they went with McCann and gave him $40 million for 4. And you just hope he doesn't turn into a pumpkin like the guy who got non-tendered a few years ago. I don't think you can expect to get George Springer and Trevor Bauer here. This is not going to be two massive free agent signings. I don't think that's how this is going to operate. These are not the people that you put in charge to go and do that. The people that you put in charge to go and do that, that's Dave Dombrowski, okay? And I know all of this comes back from the owner and what the expectations are there, considering it's somebody that is not named Wilpon, and by the way, happens to have $14 billion and is a fan of the team. Well, just because he's a fan of the team doesn't mean he's going to go play fantasy baseball with the team, okay? And that's not what you want. Something we have talked an awful lot about the last few weeks. Depth. The Mets are going to be looking for depth because they haven't had it in a while, whether it's depth in the pitching staff and getting a good fifth or sixth starter, or depth in the bullpen and positioning themselves better that way, or frankly, depth on the bench, which they have not had nearly enough of. Then you have to understand that depth is ultimately going to be a much bigger factor than signing massive free agents. And multiple massive free agents. Does that mean you're not getting George Springer? No, it doesn't mean that. I absolutely believe George Springer will be a Met. Trevor Bauer's not going to be a Met, guys. I don't see that happening. They're not going to go out and just open the coffers and go get everybody. I said this last week in case you missed it. You have to think in these terms. Do you want this to be the 1992 Mets? Do you want this to be Saberhagen and Vince Coleman and Bobby Bowe? The worst team money could buy? Is that what you're looking for? Because that's what we're talking about when you're trying to go win. Yeah, you spend money. There's no doubt that's important. The Dodgers did it for a long time. Look how long and how much they've spent to finally break through until this year. And why did they finally break through to this year? Was it because they spent an absolute fortune on superstar players? I would argue probably not. It was probably more because that they were a team that had good depth in terms of the back end of their rotation, in terms of their bullpen, guys that they could turn to and rely upon. So if you're expecting this to be just an influx of talent on the high end of the market, they're not going to go sign LeMahieu and Springer and Bauer. I think at this point you're looking at one of them, and I think it's likely going to be Springer. I think when you start talking about going much further than that, then you're going to get yourself into a situation where your expectations are not going to be met. I know how long the pain has been present. An incredibly long time. Not telling you to be patient. Not telling you to be patient. This isn't the Knicks. This isn't the Jets. It's not like that. What I'm telling you is, just because he has $14 billion doesn't mean he's going to go out and spend all of it. You don't get to that position without being successful or without being smart with your investment opportunities. So that's what he's going to encourage them to be. That's why Sandy is here. That's why Sandy hired Jared Porter. They're hoping that Jared Porter turns into the next president of operations for the team to eventually succeed Sandy. They're absolutely hoping for that to be the case. So as much as you want to get fired up for the Mets spending a fortune this offseason, they're going to spend, but don't set yourself up for a massive disappointment. It ain't happening. And I get it. Bringing Trevor Bauer here is freaking asking for it. It's asking for it. And you know he is trying to get an absolute fortune right now. I understand that. Don't blame him. I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. 800-919-3776, 98.7 ESPN, Carlin. Let's go. Get on the open lines. We will talk to you. We still have more to do in relation to DJ LeMahieu, the Yankees being $25 million apart right now, and DJ really starting to consider other offers. And we will get into why you just really need to listen to me more, because I know what I'm talking about for the most part. See, SEAC on the on the comment section of the live stream at ESPN New York 98.7's Twitter, and of course on ESPN New York's Facebook page, calling me contrarian Carlin, negative Nancy. No, it's keep your expectations in line. Okay? The good times are coming. It doesn't mean all the money's getting spent tomorrow. That's not what it means. You know, earlier today, Ken Rosenthal reported that the Yankees and DJ LeMahieu were more than $25 million apart, and that would be, right now, a deal breaker for the Yankees, obviously. And they're only going to go so far, and LeMahieu is now going to be considering other offers. Well, I was watching the Hot Stove show earlier tonight with Jack Curry, and Jack's as plugged in as it gets. Like, that's somebody. Jack Curry, Andy Martino, these are guys that you should be listening to when it comes to the Yankees. Michael, obviously, more than anybody. Michael's plugged in. You know, a lot of those guys on Yes obviously know what's going on. But Jack and John Flaherty are talking about LeMahieu and the Yankees' approach here. The Yankees really want LeMahieu to go out and try to find what the market is for him. And I understand that thinking, okay? They have to be as judicious as possible with handling situations. They don't need to write DJ LeMahieu a blank check. While they right now might be taking it for granted that nobody has been pounding down his door, you get the feeling that once the first domino falls, then things are really going to ramp up. The first big domino. Once the first big domino falls, then it's going to start to get a little bit more heated. I understand what they're doing, but God, they're dead wrong. God, they're dead wrong. You don't have to always dance around things when you have screwed this up from the get-go, okay? This has been a guy that's been the MVP of your team the last few years. There's virtually no debating that whatsoever. He has done everything that needed to be done. And yet here they are. Go ahead, shop yourself around, see what you can get. What happened to just making a guy feel good about his situation? You know he wants to be here. You're taking advantage of that. When you are Brian Cashman, and last week you make comments like, you know, you can go out there and see what others have to offer and see if that's something that we can come together and also have to offer. You know, you want to be a New York Yankee. We'll see what, you know, we'll see what that means, and being a pinstripe, being in the pinstripes means. You know what? You got to stop with that. When you have somebody like LeMahieu who has done all this, you don't need to put the guy through his paces. You really don't. You need to go and do the right thing. And if the right thing is, you know, let's say, just for argument's sake, that LeMahieu is trying to get 5 for $100. And I still think personally that somebody at some point here in the next month or so will come close to offering him that. But if you're the Yankees and you came to him with 4 for $80 and, you know, maybe a decent manageable option for a fifth year, or 3 for $65 and a good solid option for year 4. That would make LeMahieu feel like they really, truly wanted him back, as opposed to just playing the game. It's business. I get it, okay? But the problem is when the Yankees go down this road of treating their own guys differently than the guys that they're trying to go out and get. That's not what they did when it came to Gerrit Cole. It was always go and give him whatever you have to do to make sure you get him. I think that when you're looking at something like this, it should be similar. Not off the charts, but have your own guy know that you value what he is. This is somebody that's finished in the top 4 in MVP voting the last couple of years. The owners are doing everything they can to squeeze these players, but it's not going to happen at the top of the market. The Yankees, in their remarkable irresponsible spending over the years for getting the likes of Stanton and such, shouldn't be taking it out on somebody that has actually gone out and done their job, because that's what they're doing. He right now is paying for the fact that other guys have not lived up to their end of the bargain. That Aaron Hicks at $10.7 million a year hasn't been healthy enough and hasn't gotten it done. That Stanton hasn't been healthy enough and hasn't gotten it done nearly enough. He has been great at times, as we saw in the postseason this year, but the times that he has been out there versus the times that he hasn't, I mean, that number is way too close. You haven't been able to rely on him. It was a bad mistake. Why is DJ LeMahieu paying for that mistake that you made? Because that's what's happening. The guy that shows up and is doing all the right things is now paying for that. It's like the line from The Departed. I'm the guy who did his job. You must be the other guy. That's exactly what you're looking at right now. And I swear, you know, he may not want to go to Toronto, but if he gets 5 from 100 for Toronto, do you think he's going? I think he is. And whether or not his wife wants to live in New York and it's 4 for 80 or 4 for 70, whatever the Yankees are offering him, versus 5 for 100, you know, she'll figure it out for a couple of years. I think they would agree on that. 30 more million is significantly more. You don't just leave that on the table. And I've got people chiming in here on the comment section of the live stream over on ESPN New York 98.7 and, of course, on ESPN New York's Facebook page. Well, Ramon checking in. Carlin is an idiot. Get him off the air. Can't help you there. You know, talent decisions are not left up to me. But John Harvey, totally different year financially for all clubs. We get that. We understand that. We get that the Yankees didn't have anybody in the stadium this year. Okay? We get that they have a lot of debt service on the stadium. I understand that. The Yankees make a ton from yes. Their revenues in 2019 were $683 million. Don't tell me that overall they were losing money. Don't tell me that was happening, because it wasn't. It wasn't happening. There is absolutely no way that was happening. So if you're the Yankees and you're going to decide, well, you know what? This is the guy that maybe we should just let him figure out what else he can get somewhere else. And he's actually doing what he did for you, for the Toronto Blue Jays. That could be a real problem in and of itself. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Open lines. Good time to get through right now. I want to hit a couple of tweets as well and also get to some more thoughts about why you really need to be listening to me a whole lot more than you are. Mark Waters on Twitter. Sounds an awful lot like Jamal Adams. No. Jamal Adams was not somebody that was an MVP candidate. He has a massive hole in his game, and it shows in Seattle. I have to tell you, with Jamal yesterday, like, I just didn't care. I've stopped caring. I know he said whatever he said last week about Gase, didn't think he was a leader, all that. That's fine. Go do your thing. Hope you get your money, bro. Just seriously, I'm glad it's on the other side of the country. You know, like, I hope the Giants don't sign him. I don't think they will. But, you know, I hope when he's a free agent that he gets his money in Seattle and he's as far away as can be so we don't have to hear from him very much. Because Jamal is just, like, that's over with. That's over with. Got a couple of other tweets, a couple about Daniel Jones. Lloyd checking in. Especially after he preached about saving Daniel from himself last week, I have been a fan of Judge, but this was a mistake. It was a mistake. It was absolutely a mistake. He should not have been out there, because when you talk about protecting yourself, Daniel Jones was not in that situation. He couldn't do it. He was thinking too much about being injured, and as a result, he found himself in the pocket, almost indecisive in terms of even getting rid of the football. Couldn't extend plays at all. That's one thing. If you're confident that Jones yesterday, based on what you saw last week, could make plays in the pocket enough to win that game for you, then I get it. I do. I just don't know. Like, did it get worse between Thursday and Sunday? That's possible. Did it get worse between warm-ups and the game? I mean, I guess that's possible. But you obviously warmed him up. You wanted to get a good look at how he felt. If he's not telling you the truth, that's one thing. But you can tell that he was not able to move around very much at all. And that's not just the RPOs and running. Not just that. The escapability factor. That was gone. That was absolutely gone yesterday for Jones. And so, what does that mean here moving forward? For me, it means that they have to figure out if they can truly win with him this coming week. And if it's going to be the same performance that we saw yesterday, you can't. And as much as you don't want to bite the bullet, it is going to be Colt McCoy who gives you a better chance to win. Yesterday just proved something to me that I was right about last year at this time. And there were so many people that weren't paying attention to it, but it speaks to a much bigger point, and it's very applicable now around here.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.